I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Now it's time for our weekly visit to the barbershop, where the guys talk about what's in the news and what's on their minds. Sitting in the chairs for a shape-up this week, our writer Jimmy Israel with us from Cleveland. Neil Minkoff is a healthcare consultant and contributor to National Review magazine with us from Boston. From Chicago, Arsalan Iftikhar. He's founder of themuslimguy.com. And here in Washington, D.C., Kevin Blackstone. He's a sports writer and journalism professor. Take it away, Jimmy.
Thanks, Michelle. Hey, fellas.
How you doing?
Welcome to the shop. How we doing?
Hey, what's cracking?
I'm making it work, bro. KB, what's up, man? You took some time off ESPN to come slumming with us.
Oh, no, you cannot. Never that.
Are you ready for some football? Because we all know Denver was last night.
That's seven touchdown passes for Peyton Manning to tie an NFL record. The Broncos absolutely torched the Ravens, 49-27. Remember, no Ray Lewis, no Ed Reed for that Ravens defense. And the 49 points, the most
holy
they've ever given up.
Mackerel.
Don't you love how they always have to come up with a new verb for a big score? Torched, blanked,
I think they have an intern on staff whose job is just to sit down and come up with all these adjectives.
I hope so.
Thank you, Michelle. Neil Minkoff, Dr. Neil, the game is the big story today, but some fans are still talking about players suffering from concussions. What about you? Is that on your mind this season?
Yeah, I'm really glad you brought that up because, you know, I found, you know, last week the NFL paid over $500 million in a settlement. And judging by everything I've read, that settlement is so that nobody from the NFL has to say what they know about player safety and when they knew it. I follow the concussion issue and the dementia issue. I've written about it on a couple of occasions, and I think what the NFL did is reprehensible, and yet I'm still watching on Sunday. So I don't know what to do about that.
Having said all of that, you know, the evils of what's happening in the NFL, you will be there with beer and or corn chips in hand. Thank you, Dr. Neil, for your candor. Arsalan Iftikhar. A-Train.
Yes, sir.
What's on your mind about football, bro?
Fantasy football, you know, for millions of dudes and dudettes around the country, you know, this is not only, you know, the 17 weeks of the NFL season, but it's also fantasy football league. And, you know, for me, we have 12 players in our fantasy football league, which has been called Impeach Bush for many years. And I got the I got the 12th pick in the draft for the second straight year. And the only thing that I did good was the fact that I drafted Peyton Manning in my first round. In the game versus the Ravens, he had 452 yards, seven touchdowns, the first quarterback to throw for seven touchdowns in a game since 1969. He had almost 60 fantasy points. You know, for me, it's going to be interesting to see whether people like Adrian Peterson, Calvin Johnson are going to be the fantasy beasts that they have been. And, you know, for many of us out there, we've been waiting for NFL season to start.
All right. Well, KB, Kevin Blackstone, you know, look, man, we don't have to talk about the beating that your Ravens took. But, you know, I'd rather talk about? I'd rather talk about Philadelphia Eagle Riley Cooper. Now, you might remember him. He's the guy who got caught on tape using a racial slur at the Kenny Chesney concert, which is so strange. But, you know, he as it turns out, he got into it with fellow Eagle Kerry Williams yesterday. Tell us about that.
Well, it was a heated practice going into the opening week, and which is very odd because usually this kind of thing happens during training camp. And Kerry Williams, who's known around the league to be a little bit of a hothead, threw the N-word back at Riley Cooper. They had to be separated, most notably by Michael Vick. Kerry Williams then went after Michael Vick a little bit verbally, and Michael Vick didn't much care for that. And, you know, the bottom line to this whole story is that had Riley Cooper not been a part of this scuffle, we wouldn't hear about it. But this has become, this is going to be a narrative for the Philadelphia Eagles all season long. And I'll tell you the most troubling thing about it for the Eagles and Eagles fans is the fact that Michael Vick also said that he didn't feel that some of the younger players on this team were respecting him. And so, you know, here's a guy who has matured, who is a leader of a team, and if he feels like he's not getting respect from other players because of this whole Riley Cooper thing, Riley Cooper's not even the story anymore, but has become kind of a wedge in this team. That's going to be a real problem for the Eagles going forward.
Yes, and the tears I have to wipe from my eyes, you know, because my dude, he's not getting the RSSCEPT that he deserves. Oh,
but, you know, but he raised this interesting question, though, about, because we talked to Chris Carter earlier this year, who has a new memoir out about...
Great guy.
And one of the things he talked about is that people don't understand that this league is 75% African-American in terms of the players. And people find out that you're a guy who's throwing the N-word around. And you know, we can get into this whole debate about who gets to use it. You know, black people use it to just address each other. Doesn't that mean white people use it? Well, no, Cooper clearly did not mean that in a fraternal way. He meant it as an insult. And so now Chris Carter says, how do you then expect to work with these people and think that they're going to see you in the same way? And I'm just, and you have to wonder whether he called it right.
That, well, he did, you know? Because this is, and I said this from day one, this is the jailhouse justice for Riley Cooper. He's going to face this the rest of his career, not only with his teammates, but around the league, and particularly being a wide receiver going up against defensive backs, almost all of whom are black. It's going to make for a very interesting, and Kerry Williams being a defensive back on his team, it's going to be a very interesting rest of the career for Riley Cooper.
If you're just joining us, we're having our weekly Barbershop Roundtable. We're joined by writer Jimmy Israel, commentator Arsalan Iftikhar, sports writer Kevin Blackstone, and healthcare consultant Neil Minkoff. Can I just ask one more question about this? The concussions issue. I mean, Dr. Neil is trained as a doctor. He's not practicing at the moment. He's working as a healthcare consultant and a writer. But he raises this question of, does what we know, it's true that the settlement means that we're not going to know as much as we could know about what the NFL knows about these healthcare concerns. But the players who signed it did agree to it. So, Kevin, does this make you pause in some way? Does it change the way you see the game? I mean, does this, all that this coming out about this issue, and it's not conclusive, but it's a lot. Change the way you see the game.
It underscores how powerful the NFL is. You look at the offseason for this team. You have one of the for this league. You had one of their superstar players get arrested and is now under investigation and being held in jail for 3 murders. You have the concussion issue. You also had the fact that they were able to defying the PBS frontline investigation into concussions by getting ESPN, a rights holder in NFL, to back out, and they paid 8.5% of revenues to make the concussions lawsuits basically go away. And as you pointed out, they get to hold on to the information and don't have to say that, you know what, football caused these injuries. It's very much like the tobacco.
Where are you in this as a fan? That's the question, because you don't have to smoke.
Because
you don't have to watch football, but it is the most watched sport in the country. I'm asking you, where are you in this?
I am like Dr. Neil. I tune back in. I soak it in. And you know what? I cringe at every hit that I see and hope that the people get up.
Yeah. I feel guilty for watching. I feel like a Roman sometimes in the Colosseum. Yeah. I feel guilty for watching, and yet, you know, it's so ingrained in the culture that I can't pull myself away.
Arsalan, what about you?
Same here. I remember during the Ravens Broncos game, every time there was a good hit, I'd be like, oh, that's a good hit, and I hope that the guy is going to be able to stand up.
What about you, Jimmy?
Well, you know, I'm not the biggest. Even you live in Cleveland all your life. You're not the biggest football fan, you know. But I compare it to boxing in terms of I am a huge boxing fan, and I know these people are getting their brains beat in, but I am there. Corn chips, beer, even my son very oftentimes is there with me, and we're watching these people being beaten to a pulp. So I guess, you know, I can't throw any stones at Dr. Neil or anybody in the barbershop, you know, for all of us watching these people slowly losing their minds on the field of football battle.
You know, we were talking about the N-word earlier, speaking of which, in a totally different context here. You know that there was a New York jury brought the hammer down on a boss who used the N-word in the office, and the twist is that the boss and the employee were both black, and the jury awarded a $280,000 judgment against the supervisor for creating a hostile workplace. And there's a tape of one of the conversations in question. Do you mind if I play it a little?
Yeah, drop
well,
it.
I think you need to hear it so you understand what it is we're talking about. And okay. I do have to tell you that I think many people will find it offensive. Here it is.
Both of you, you know what it is? Both of you are and I'm not saying using the term derogatory, because sometimes it's good to know when to act like a but y'all act like all the time.
I'm really offended by that. I don't think that I do.
You could be offended, but it's true.
Wow! Holy mackerel!
I can't believe it. Cannot believe it.
when Keeping It Real goes wrong, when barbershop talk comes out of the barbershop and into your HR office. Hello. You know, thanks for that, Michelle. You know, the boss has been described as a 61-year-old black man of Puerto Rican descent. Well, that clearly explains everything. Kevin Black is double. The boss testified he was just using tough love. Okay. Does he have an argument here, bro?
Well, he has an argument, but he's going to lose it in the workplace. You know, there's a court case that has precedent over this. I'm sure Arsalan can talk about Brandenburg versus Ohio, which says that this is a fighting word. This is not protected speech. So in this case, you have to be very careful about how you wield what is the most lethal word in English language in the American vocabulary. Vernacular. Okay. And in this case, it came back to bite this guy.
Wow. Arsalan.
Yes, sir. Well, first of all, I'd like to know if the boss's name was Clayton Bigsby. But what's important here is the fact that, you know, when you're looking at any sort of employment discrimination case, you know, the standard becomes a, quote, hostile work environment. It's a legal term of art where, you know, anything that it's trying to find out whether words that were said by the boss create a hostile work environment. And in this case, it did. And I don't think that context matters whether it was a white boss or a black boss. If an employee has a reasonable fear that it creates a hostile work environment, it's like saying that a female boss cannot be found guilty of sexual harassment in the workplace because women tend to be the victims predominantly in sexual harassment cases. Mm-hmm. But women can, you know, sexually harass other employees in the workplace. And so I think it's important to keep in mind that anything that causes a hostile work environment is frowned upon and can be found, in a civil lawsuit.
Right.
Let me just push one more thing out here. Sorry to jump in here because there's one more thing I wanted to talk about before we let everybody go. Jimmy, you were calling this the guy who just won't go away, Anthony Weiner. He was running last in the Democratic race for mayor of New York City, but he got into an argument at a New York bakery this week. It was the beginning of the High Holy Days. He went in there to get to Rosh Hashanah, and he went in to get some honey cookies, I think it was, and this is what happened.
You're a real scumbag, Anthony.
Wow, very nice. Very nice. That's a charming guy right there. Very nice. In front of children,
nice.
That is charming.
Disgusting. You're disgusting.
Charming.
Disgusting.
Yeah, it takes one to know one.
So, in case you didn't catch it, the customer said something to Weiner about being married to an Arab. And in case you don't know, his wife is Huma Abedin. She's a longtime aide to former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. The man who confronted Weiner described himself as Jewish, and he said that their marriage bothered him. And so, you know, gee whiz, who do you like in this story? Neil, what about you? I mean, who do you like in this story?
Can I vote none of the above? I mean, look, I'm a combative, argumentative Jewish guy who has spent many a high holiday yelling at people while little bits of honey cake are flying out of my mouth. The problem I have here is that Weiner didn't defend his wife. He didn't go up to the guy and say, leave my wife out of it, or my wife has suffered enough, or any of those things, or my wife's not an Arab, get your facts straight. He went in and had this incredibly, extremely narcissistic argument with this guy about who are you to judge me when I'm asking for your vote. So, like, the whole thing just didn't add up. What bothered me about this is, look, the guy who heckled him clearly has some of his own issues about that. But Weiner is, to be fair, the one in the public eye, the one asking for the vote, and he didn't stand up to the offensive comment. He turned it into yet another all-about-me Wienerism.
That's an interesting point. Arsalan, what do you think?
Well, first of all, if I was Anthony Weiner, I would start every press conference by saying it's actually pronounced Weiner, but that's neither here nor there. You know, what did bother me the most was the fact that, as Neil said, that this guy said that you're married to an Arab. Huma Abedin is not an Arab. She's of Indo-Pakistani descent. She's a Muslim. And what the guy was essentially saying is you're married to a Muslim. And instead of challenging sort of the racialist overtone of that, it went back to him, you know, talking about, you know, you can't judge me. What rabbi taught you that? I think that we will all be better once Anthony Weiner rides off into the sunset.
Jimmy, I want you to have the last word. Kevin, what do you think? Should voters be thinking about this as they're voting on this guy? I mean, do you think this should be part of the equation?
First of all, the amazing thing is that he's still running. That's the amazing thing. The second thing is that it took him this long to crack. And someone says, like, spits something like that out of the side of their mouth at you. You know, I listened to the tape. He didn't say anything offensive. He didn't hurl any slurs back at this guy. He didn't punch him. I mean, I think a lot of people really would have lost it, especially when your wife is injected into the argument.
Jimmy, what do you think?
Yeah, no women, no kids. You know, I mean, I've been a public eye for a minute, and people have been really smart about not trying to drag my people down with me in their criticisms, because, you know, I've let it be known that I'm that dude and I don't get down like that. You know, so I'm all about Tony Weiner. Tony Weiner, I've got your back, bro. But don't send me any pictures. We're good. We're good on that, bro. We're good, but I got your back, B. Somebody start talking about your wife. They clearly don't want their teeth very, very much longer. So, yeah, you got to handle that any way you want.
What about Neil's point, though, that he kind of didn't really defend his wife? He kind of made it about himself. What do you think?
I thought that was smart. I thought that was he forced the guy to focus his argument. Because when you start snapping on people with your mama jokes and your daddy wears combat boots, then you move far afield from whatever your argument is. So if your argument is that I'm an immoral person, then let's deal with that. And that's what he tried to do. But your argument is that my wife is an Arab, then we need to step outside. You know, so what he really did is he let dude off the easy way, because if the argument is my wife's an Arab, then we gonna have to step outside, B, honey cookies and all, you know. But if you believe I'm an immoral person, then let's focus that argument. That's what he did. So I thought it was smart.
Well, it was an interesting week. It was an interesting week. Lots of slurs thrown around and lots of interesting things to talk about, or about those slurs that were thrown around with. So thanks, everybody. And Happy New Year to those who celebrate. Lashana Tova, to those who are celebrating, who are observing. Jimmy Israel's a writer and culture critic. He's also adjunct professor of film and social media at Cuyahoga Community College. He joined us from NPR member station WCPN in Cleveland. Neil Minkoff is a healthcare consultant, a contributor to the National Review. He joined us from Boston. Arsalan Iftikhar is founder of themuslimguide.com, senior editor for Islamic Monthly, with us from NPR member station WBEZ in Chicago. And Kevin Blackstone is a sports writer and professor of journalism at the University of Maryland, here with us in our Washington, D.C. studios. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Peace out.
Yep.
And remember, if you can't get enough Barbershop Buzz on the radio, look for our Barbershop podcast. That's in the iTunes store or at npr.org. That's our program for today. I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News and the African American Public Radio Consortium. Let's talk more on Monday.